WAER Sports proudly presents the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
In a season where SU's top target was out for the season in week two, its quarterback tearing its shoulder in October, and Dino Babers getting fired in November, South Florida takes down Syracuse in the Boca Raton Bowl 45-0.
Copeland, left wing three! It's good! Quadir Copeland wins the game for Syracuse!
Gary Gate, you are the king of the Queen City. 14-13, number 9 Syracuse upsets number 2 Johns Hopkins, and that's the first top 5 win of the Gary Gate era.
Hearing from a host of guests.
We now have the pleasure of being joined by Tom Luganville, college football analyst and director of scouting for ESPN.
We have the pleasure of being joined by our most esteemed guest, the number one guest on the Ostrom Avenue podcast in terms of total number of appearances, Brent Axe of Syracuse.com.
And providing all the hot takes.
I still think that Syracuse will make Final Four weekend for men's lacrosse.
I've seen enough. Chris Bell and Justin Taylor cannot play together successfully.
My favorite content here on the Hill is when Felicia Leggett Jack and Ian McIntyre interact on Twitter.
That is
legendary.
That might be your best take of all time.
It's the Ostrom Avenue podcast, and it starts right now.
Welcome into another edition of the Ostrom Avenue podcast. As always, I'm joined by AJ Myers. I'm Jordan Leonard. AJ, we got a lot of football to get to. It is officially game week, week number one of the Syracuse football season. We're going to react to the depth chart that came out on Monday. Players to watch, offense, defense, special teams, most intriguing games of the schedule. And of course, we have to give some record predictions because, you know, at the end of the day, the record's all that matters. Dino Babers, like we mentioned a lot of times in the past, formed a great Ohana. But if you don't win enough games, you can't keep a job in college football. So we're going to get to all of that. But of course, we got to start with the depth chart. We're recording this on Monday night, and the depth chart came out earlier this afternoon. And, you know, it's some interesting stuff on both sides, I think the most interesting thing, obviously, the first thing that I was looking at had to be the cornerback position, because I think there's a lot up for grabs in terms of that position. And, you know, unfortunately, the only defined starter on the cornerback depth chart is Clarence Lewis. Jaden Bellamy is the backup on that side, but we don't know who's going to be starting at the other cornerback spot. It's going to be either Marcellus Barnes or Devin Grant. And that's kind of how these college teams kind of get away with not acknowledging fully who's going to go in first or second. They put an or between the name, but I think that position is intriguing. Clarence Lewis, who transferred in after the spring game from Notre Dame, earns a starting quarterback spot and the only firm starting cornerback spot coming out of camp.
Yeah, I mean, Lewis was kind of that like late add that people were excited about right when the spring game came around. And, you know, I think our reaction was it's like another depth piece, but turns out he must have had a really solid camp to earn that starting spot.
Yeah, and then obviously the defense, the linebackers were pretty self-explanatory. Yeah. Marlo Wax, Tarik McDonald. The safeties, including the star position, Elijah Clark, Justin Barron, Deuce Chestnut, that was expected there. Interesting to see kind of who those backups are. It looks like Cornell Perry, Jaden Gould, and Barry Buxton, the third. On the defensive line, it's kind of even hard to really analyze at this point because there's so many oars at those spots.
Yeah.
Fadil Diggs is the starter at defensive end. At the other defensive end part, it's Dennis Jaquez Jr. or Chase Simmons or Jahad Lassane Jr. And then you go inside, everyone's an or. So there's no real starter per se yet. But the two guys at least listed at the top of the D-tackle room right now is Tank Wilson and Isaiah Hastings. Tank Wilson transferred in from New Mexico State, and Isaiah Hastings coming in from Alabama. So there's a lot still of questions to be answered on the defensive line, but it looks like the guys that kind of have been tracking towards starting roles seem to be towards the top, at least of those or categories on the defensive front.
Yeah, I think Fran Brown really got away with this whole or thing. I think he used that to his best ability. And for me, the defense, I don't think has really been talked about enough leading up to camp. Maybe that's just me, but I'm not concerned about the defense. But if it is a problem, I wouldn't be surprised because I just feel like there is a lot of unknown to who really is starting outside of the veteran pieces, which the veteran pieces they do have, I think, are some of the best players in the ACC.
Yeah. I don't know if there's concern for me necessarily going into the season. Obviously, you switch from the 3-3-5 to the 4-2-5. I think that's actually pretty similar in its concepts. You still have Justin Barron, at, you know, they're calling it the star position. It's essentially the rover. It's, you know, you can change the name. It's kind of the same kind of position. What you do will change a little bit based on the scheme. But I think the most interesting thing is the defensive line. There's still a lot of question marks of who's going to play the most. I think, you know, based on the depth chart, it's going to be a lot of rotation, and whether there's changes going into a game week against the Georgia Tech based on performances against Ohio, we'll have to see. But if you look at the defensive tackle spot, I mean, last year they had Kayvon Darton. I don't have his exact measurements right now, but I can tell you he definitely was around 6'2 max and maybe 250 pounds, give or take. Now you have a guy named Tank towards the top of that line, and he's 300 pounds and 6'5. And hey, he's listed as Tank on the depth chart. That means we can now officially call him Tank.
Yeah, Tank.
That might be the best thing about this depth chart right here.
He's got to get some NIL with that, I feel like.
What'd you say?
Some NIL with that name, I feel like. I don't know.
There's got to be. I don't know if you've seen driving around Syracuse, but Mellow Roofing is a company around here. Mm-hmm. It's got to be related to Carmelo. There's no other way around it. Maybe. And then you got Isaiah Hastings at the other defensive tackle spot, 294 pounds. So you got a lot more beef up front, which will help, especially in the run defense this season.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's going to be key. And I really think with this defense, I think it's just a matter of once we see it, I think we'll have a better understanding of who Fran Brown favors. Because right now with all these ores, I think it's kind of hard to piece together what is really the lineup's going to be. But I think after that Ohio game, we'll have more of a sense of how this defense is going to be structured.
Yeah, for sure. We'll get to the offense in a second. We'll go special teams, a little quick ground right here. the specialists in terms of kicking, no shock there. Brady Denenberg, the starter. Jack Stonehouse, the punter. Tom Callahan, the long snapper. No real shock right there. In terms of kick returning, I think it'll be interesting to see how they handle this now that Trevor Pena is back. At kick returner, him and Malachi James are listed as those ones. And then at punt return, Trevor Pena is a one. LaQuinn Allen, interesting, as a number two. Yeah. And, well, along with Zeed Haynes as well. So I'll be interested to see who they end up going with. I believe this could be a position where, obviously, Trevor Pena has returned kicks in the past, but whether it be punt or kick return, he's been very good at it. But he's never really played to the extent at wide receiver at the same time that he is going to this year. Yeah. So I think the or at the top, especially in the kick return category, is they don't want to say Malachi James is that number one guy. They want to kind of ease him into this. And once they feel comfortable with his world-class speed on the field, get those freshman jitters out of the way, it could become more of a, let's lean on Malachi James to return kicks, give Trevor Pena that little bit extra breather when he plays on offense.
Yeah, I think you're spot on with that. I think once James gets accumulated to the position and comfortable, he'll be the guy. And I don't really think they want to send out a starter, especially LaQuinn Allen. I really don't want to see him returning kicks. I just feel like that's a way for him to get injured or for something to happen. You want him on the field as a running back, not really as a special teams player. I think he's too valuable to this team for him to be returning kicks.
I do agree. It is an interesting point, though, in terms of the special teams coach on Friday. I talked about how starters are going to play on special teams, whether it's blocking, kicking, punt return, whatever. And he mentioned that Aronde Gadsden would be on, I think, two special teams, give or take, going into the season, which is great. Sets the tone. You know, if you want to get on the field, you have to be apt and, you know, have the potential of a starter. But, you know, the longer you go in the season, the more, you know, little nagging injuries that you can have. So having that depth, especially that you can use on special teams, is going to be important. We'll go to the offense. No shock, Kyle McCord, QB number one. QB two decision still hasn't technically been made. Michael Johnson Jr. listed as or with CDRW, Carlos Del Rio Wilson. LaQuinn Allen, the number one running back. Yassine Willis, my guy, is tied right now with Will Nixon at the or in terms of running backs. I think that's kind of just because they're two different types of running backs. Yassine Willis, more of a short yardage power back. Will Nixon, more of a maybe pass catching threat of the backfield, you know, third down type of running back, different kind of body type. The tight end room might be one of the best tight end rooms in the country. Aronde Gadsden, Dan Villari, both very capable tight ends. Wide receivers, we didn't know what we were going to see necessarily coming in for this. We figured Zeed Haynes was going to be that number one wide receiver. He is. Umari Hatcher earned himself a starting spot in camp. At the other receiver spot, Trevor Peña starting in the slot. That's no shock there. The backup to Zeid Hanes, Darryl Gill Jr., played last year. Jackson Meeks, one of the transfers, along with Zeid Hanes. He's a backup from Georgia, excuse me. He's a backup behind Umari Hatcher. And then potentially my guy this season, another freshman that I've loved during camp watching. And if you've watched the ACC All Access, you've kind of noticed him a little bit in terms of catching balls from Kyle McCord. Emmanuel Ross was one of the freshmen that Fran Brown flipped once he got to Syracuse. He was initially committed to Stanford. He was a four-star from New Jersey. He then decommitted and committed to Syracuse. I think he can really have an impact on this team. And now I'm not going to go say he's going to have 500 yards because, you know, that would probably make either Darryl Gill Jr. or Zeid Hanes have to get hurt kind of thing. But he can actually have an impact. I think he's going to be, you know, that 5-6 receiver. And when he gets on the field, he can have catches. He's a great route runner from what I've seen in practice. And he's definitely going to have a bright future ahead of him. But I think he can actually make an impact as a freshman wide receiver on the team.
I think this wide receiver group is really interesting because I think both of us, in the time we've covered Syracuse and watched this team, they haven't really had a real wide receiving threat, like a dynamic wide receiver. And I think with this group, there's two Georgia transfers. They've, you know, a lot of hype around them. They've been seen in the All Access documentary a lot. I think that's, I don't know if that was on purpose, but I think it's just to get their name out there to show how talented both of them are. I think it's going to be interesting because Kyle McCord, he likes to throw the ball. SU, I think they're going to be a more ball-throwing team than they were in prior years. They're still going to lean on the Quint Allen, no doubt about it. He's one of the best running backs in the ACC. You're going to lean on a player that is that good. But when you have, it's a new group of wide receivers, and I just think it's a breath of fresh air for Syracuse because I just don't think they've had this kind of talent in the wide receiver room that they've had in prior years. A name, though, that was left off that depth chart was Justice Ross Simmons, who was another transfer, but he's been dealing with an injury. So kind of an unfortunate start for his Syracuse career. And it's, I don't know if he's going to be available for week one. I don't think Fran Brown's really made his status clear yet.
Yeah, Fran Brown didn't specify today in his press conference to start game week, but he did mention that's one of the reasons he's not on the depth chart, still dealing with a hamstring injury that he's been kind of dealing with during camp. He's been off to the side, riding the bike, kind of rehabbing that. But I think that just shows also the added depth that wide receiver that Syracuse has, because Justice Ross Simmons isn't even on the depth chart, and he's probably one of the better wide receivers on the team transferring in from Colorado State. Had almost or over 20 offers when he entered the transfer portal coming over from CSU. So that really talks about the depth at wide receiver. I've never seen this many names that you can truly feel good about going out at wide receiver for Syracuse. And that's not even including in the conversation Aronde Gadsden or Dan Villari or LaQuinn Allen coming out of the backfield or potentially Will Nixon coming out of the backfield, transferred in from Washington, played for a national championship last year. So this skill position group is vastly improved. And then you add in a Kyle McCord at quarterback. And when you have a better quarterback, the guys who can throw guys open, where even if they're maybe not open per se, they're open because he can put balls on dimes, back shoulder, leading them in between defenders. That's just going to further immensely add to that vaunted passing attack that, you know, in past seasons, you might not have called vaunted. But I think this year you can truly say there are so many weapons that Syracuse in the passing game is going to be very dangerous.
In past seasons, the Syracuse's second or third leading wide receiver was often a running back, whether that was LaQuinn Allen or even Sean Tucker. I think it was 3 years ago. Sean Tucker was the second leading receiver.
And a lot of those passes to Sean Tucker came from screens. That could show you how downfield passing has not been Syracuse's strong suit in years past. We'll get to the offensive line because it did include a makeover in the offseason as well. Demetrius Witherspoon, otherwise known as Big Spoon, 6'7", 330, transfer from Howard, gets the start at left tackle. He had to drop 30 pounds just to be in the conversation to start at left tackle between spring practice and summer camp. He does that. Jacob Bradford, the starting left guard. John Ray Reed, the starting center, probably the one that was most cemented in the group going into spring camp back in the spring and now into fall camp. Mark Petrie, who started at right tackle last year, now moving in to play right guard. And Savion Washington, the Colorado transfer, at right tackle as well. I mean, you should look, and Fran Brown has really talked about this immensely since he's gotten here. big guys beat little guys. Like the size that has been added, not only on the defensive line that we talked about in Isaiah Hastings and Tank Wilson, the size at tackle, 330, 6'7", 330 in Demetrius Witherspoon, and Savion Washington, 6'8", 340. I mean, those are just big men right there that can, you know, take on opposing defensive ends in the ACC. And when other teams are, I'm going to throw out names that have been in the ACC, but Jermaine Johnson or Brian Brissy, when those guys are on the edge, they're big men too. So you got to put up the size to match that as well. And I think Syracuse has done that this year.
I think Fran Brown knows that from being in the SEC. There's a lot of big guys in that conference, as I think people all know. And I'm really excited to see Demetrius Witherspoon, Big Spoon, as they're calling him, as you said. I know he just has that HBCU experience, so the ACC will be a step up. But I'm just really excited to see him. And he's such a big guy, even though that he did drop 30 pounds. I think the fans are really going to gravitate towards him because of his size. And also the guy that's listed right behind him on the depth chart, Joshua Miller. He was the guy from Georgia. He redshirted his freshman year. He never played at Georgia, but it'd be interesting to see how many snaps he does get. I'm excited to see him. Maybe it's not this year's his breakout year, but maybe a few seasons down the line. He's one to watch for this year, though. I'm keeping an eye out for him.
Yeah, for sure. Enrique Cruz at the backup right tackle spot. He was the starting left tackle last year, so it potentially shows the improvement in the offensive line from the last year under Dino Babers into the first year under Fran Brown. So there was your depth chart that came out this morning. This, again, changes every week, but it was the first depth chart put out by Syracuse to start the 2024 season. So we'll go in reverse order back now, offense, special teams, defense, to give our players to watch on offense. And I kind of talked about it a little bit when I went over the wide receiver room, just because of how excited I am about Emmanuel Ross. I've already bragged enough about Yassine Willis, and, you know, Syracuse Sports Brent Axe has hopped on that wave as well. But I think Emmanuel Ross, even when Justice Ross Simmons comes back, is still going to have an impact in this wide receiver room, because not everyone's going to be healthy every week. Somebody's going to be bumps and bruises, or as Dino Babers used to call it, owies. So you're going to have to rotate these wide receivers in constantly throughout the game. And whether you have two, three, four wide receivers on the field, Emmanuel Ross will get on that field. And he's 6'2", 202 as a freshman, which is pretty good size for a freshman wide receiver. You consider Zeed Haynes is only 170 in terms of the weight department. I think he's going to get on the field enough where it's going to be noticeable. He's going to make an impact for this offense. He's dynamic. He was a four-star coming out of high school. I think he's going to be an underrated player to watch out for, especially in that wide receiver room that right now is so packed by guys that have been here or guys that have transferred in the first year under Fran Brown.
I think all summer I've kind of alluded to my excitement around these wide receivers. And I know you've established who your guy is. I don't know. Do you have two guys or just one?
I have two guys now. I established Yassine Willis back in the winter. So I figured it was now another time to potentially establish another wide receiver on this team, you know, before we get the season underway.
All right. I'm ready to establish my guy here. I feel like I need some music or something, but my guy is Zeed Haynes. I'm really excited to see him. The whole Georgia aspect just gets me even more excited, just because SEC wide receivers, high powered offense coming to Syracuse, the All Access documentary also helped that. I think he just looks like a mold to be a wide receiver number one. And I'm not taking anything away from Ronde Gadsden, because he probably will be the big target out there, because I think he has the most experience out of anyone in that room, given that he stays healthy. But I think Zeed Haynes is due for a big year coming from Georgia. I think he's really going to fit in well with Kyle McCord. This is going to be a pass heavy offense, as many people have alluded to, Fran Brown saying that as well. I'm excited for that. And I'm excited for Syracuse to finally have a wide receiver, not a tight end who can be considered a wide receiver, an actual wide receiver one. I think they have that in Zeed Haynes.
The great choice right there. I think honestly, you know, other than players to watch, the most intriguing thing for me for this offense is how balanced are they?
Yeah.
Because they have, you know, so many weapons. They can throw two at wide receiver. They got the two great tight ends. You know, you can't put all these guys at the field at once. You got LaQuinn Allen at running back, who, you know, Fran Brown wants to have 1,500 yards this season. So how do you balance the rushing attack with the passing attack? How do you balance having two really good tight ends that you want to put potentially in 12 personnel? So I think that honestly, you know, calling plays for Nixon this year, Jeff Nixon, is going to be key. But, you know, managing the personnel packages, also getting all these guys on the field in a rhythm throughout a game, is going to be fun to watch for myself. We'll move on to special teams in terms of players to watch. I don't know if you have a specific guy, potentially, you know, one of the place kickers or one of the kick returners that you're watching out for this year, AJ.
I'm going to look. It's going to be interesting with the kick returners. Who is going to be the main kick returning guy? And, you know, how many special teams touchdowns can Syracuse get? That's what I'm more curious about, whether whoever it is lining up back there, because they didn't get one last year, right? I don't think so.
I don't think so. The last one that comes to mind was Courtney Jackson. Was Courtney Jackson my freshman year? I'm pretty sure scored a kick return touchdown against someone. I memory is in my head, but it definitely wasn't last year or the year before that.
Yeah. So I can't remember any really special teams touchdown. So that's what I'm looking forward to the most is there going to be any kind of offense coming from the special teams? Outside of that, just make sure there's no sloppy mistakes on the kicking or anything like that. Don't make special teams a problem.
Hey, three. It's a three-phase game. Offense and defense can't work without special teams working as well. I'll go with the punter, Jack Stonehouse. Yeah. A little bit of a chalk pick. He played pretty well last year after transferring in from Missouri. I think he's one of the better punters in the ACC, if not in the country. And I think the punting game is so underrated because depending on where you're punting from, or even if you're punting in your own territory, the ability to set the other team back inside their own 20, inside their own 10, inside their own 5 only helps your team overall and your defense specifically. Not only to mention Fran Brown, because, you know, if your special teams is working on that level as a punt unit, it helps you make in-game decisions of whether you trust your defense, trust the offense, and how you manage the game clockwise. So I think Jack Stonehouse is going to be key. If he improves from the year he had last year, the sky's the limit for the SU punt unit. And he's going to be a key to watch. Also interesting to note that he's going to be the holder this year and not Justin Barron. So see how good he is in terms of holding the ball for Brady Denenberg, who's coming back for his junior season at the place kicker position. We'll move to the defense player to watch. There's so many names that you could really pick from. And I think, honestly, if you look at the list, it has to be at a position that is interesting and not necessarily defined just yet. I'm going to go with Clarence Lewis because nobody kind of knew exactly where the corners would be when the depth chart came out. But the fact that Clarence Lewis, who played somewhat at Notre Dame, he started around 20 games, but over 4 years, transferred in after the spring window. So he only had summer camp really to work on the scheme, show off his skills. And the fact that he's the only one that has earned a starting spot in that short time frame shows really about his work ethic, his talent going against these receivers like Azeed Haynes every day in practice. And he's got the height. He's 6 foot, 201 pounds. He's long, he's athletic, and he's a veteran. That's huge. When you're talking about veteran corners, you go back to Johnson last year, who was a fifth-year guy, really brought that veteran nature to a cornerback room. And the fact that he is a veteran working with other veterans at the safety spot, Elijah Clark, Justin Barron, Deuce Chestnut, the communication, I'm going to assume, based on their veteran nature, is going to be great. So I think Clarence Lewis is a guy that really nobody knew, obviously, until the spring, until he transferred here, but could be a really big player outside for Syracuse this season.
Yeah, well, I think you look at this depth chart, I think there's maybe a lot of unknowns or a lot of ors as it's on the depth chart. There's definitely a lot of experience and there's a lot of leadership. And I think that's key on defense, because I think on offense, you have the quarterback. That's your leader on the offensive end. But I think on the defense, especially in football, you can always have three or four leaders. And I do think Syracuse has that. And the player I'm most excited to see and I'm watching out for is a transfer. It's defensive end Fadil Diggs from Texas A&M. He looked really good there. He had 75 career tackles, 3 forced fumbles. He can play this position to a top level. And what I was most impressed about, he's never missed a game. Knock on wood, but I think that is it.
Don't jinx him, AJ. Don't jinx him.
I know. I don't want to jinx him. I really don't want to jinx him. But I think that is a stat that's hard to get in football because of how many owies that come up throughout the season. But if he can stay healthy, then that's just a position that is solidified to where the rest of the defense, there's a lot of, you know, coin tosses. And another player who I don't think people have they've forgotten about, but Marlo Wax, he's going to be a senior. I think he can definitely be first team all ACC. He got that second team nod last season. I'm excited for him to have a big senior year because I think he's fully capable of that.
Yeah. Marlo and Derek McDonald, both at the linebacker position, two guys you know, as long as they're on the field, you really don't have to worry about, which is great in terms of your two linebackers on the field. The interesting thing about Fadil Diggs is, you know, having been at practice a couple times, he does not look 6'5". Like when you look at the depth chart, 6'5", 260, or I think whatever they listed, go back to the 261. He does not look that big, but he plays that big in terms of when he's on the field. And especially when you're transferring in from Texas A&M, you know, obviously there's still the size in those ACC lines, but usually the SEC lines, offensive lines are a little bit better than some ACC offensive lines. So we'll see how the talent transfers to the ACC, especially when, you know, you're that top dog on that defensive line going into the season. Everyone is going to circle you on that scouting report every single week. So we got our players to watch, offense, defense, special teams. We got the depth chart taken to a T. We got to go shift to the schedule. Everyone throughout the offseason has been talking about how easy this schedule is. It's one of the easier ones in the Power Four Conference. Gets a little bit harder, technically. Georgia Tech knocking off number 10, Florida State. Emily Liker on our last episode of the Georgia podcast. Yeah, spot on right there about Georgia Tech being better than some people think. That's week two. But AJ, I'll ask you this. You know, and you could say exactly what Emily said in terms of that Georgia Tech game. But what is the most intriguing game on the schedule in your mind?
For me, I keep gravitating towards this October stretch where they're not at home. I know they have a bye week, but I look at when that ends against Virginia Tech at home. For me, that when Dino Babers was head coach at that point in the year, at least the last two seasons, that's where the team could not win a game. It was almost looked like they were gassed. There was a lot of injuries. What is the team going to look like when Virginia Tech comes here? Because it's a good Virginia Tech team, and it could really decide what direction this team goes in the ACC. So look at that game, and I also look at the last game of the season against Miami. How meaningful of a game is that going to be? And if it is, I think it's so interesting because, unfortunately, it's at a point in the year where the students won't be here. They'll be on break. So if it is that meaningful game, what kind of atmosphere would it be, and how exciting that would be too? Because, I mean, at least since I've, you know, really watched closely Syracuse football, there's been no meaningful games outside of the bowl games at the end of a season. So how important will that Miami game be, and what will the status of the team be come that Virginia Tech game after you go no home games for a long stretch? You have your bye weeks. Where will the team be when Virginia Tech comes?
Yeah, that's a great game. Virginia Tech coming to the Dome. They're one of the hyped up teams to potentially sneak in to the CFP expanded playoff this year. They're receiving votes in the first AP poll. The most intriguing game is Georgia Tech for me, just because of how early it is in the season. You know, they proved themselves against Florida State. Can Syracuse prove themselves week two? What can they do? Can they play and potentially beat a ranked Georgia Tech team that could be ranked at that moment of time? But I'll go also pick another game in terms of the schedule. And you look at that road game at NC State. NC State starts off the season ranked number 24 in the nation. Coastal Carolina transfer Grayson McCall at quarterback. They're always a solid team. It's one of your first really true road games. You go at UNLV the game before, which will be interesting to see how Syracuse handles a road atmosphere. But I think, you know, that first road ACC game, potentially against the ranked NC State squad, can really define that back half of the season that you were talking about. It's the last game before the second bye week. So they get a bye week between that and Pitt. So I think if they get a win there, or if they can have a really good showing, fight, battle, really prove to themselves they can be in games against the best teams in the country, that can really set themselves up going into that bye week, to that back half of the schedule that you were kind of detailing with that Virginia Tech game and the Miami game a little bit there. So I think that's the most intriguing part. But, you know, it really just depends on what their record is, because depending on which game you're talking about, like that Miami game could, you know, towards the end of the season, depending on what their record could be, could, you know, the meaning could switch a lot. So speaking of that, we got some record predictions coming up for you. I didn't do the math in my head, so I'm actually going to go through each of these games real quick. But it's an interesting schedule because, like everyone said throughout the offseason, it's easier than last year's schedule, one of the easier in the Power Four, but how easy will depend on how the season evolves. Let's see, Ohio one. I'm counting wins right here.
Yeah.
Ohio,
Holy
Georgia
Cross.
Tech, okay. Stanford, Holy Cross, UNLV, Pitt, BC, Cal, UConn. So that leaves three. No. Yeah, Yeah, three. So I'll go 9-3 on the season.
Wow.
Sneak that win against Georgia Tech. NC State's a hard road game. Your first in conference road game against an ACC team. VT coming to the dome at that time in the year, they'll most likely be undefeated or one loss because of their schedule. So they'll have a lot to play for in terms of college football playoff type stuff. And then Miami is one of those teams. Cam Ward, they'll be fighting for college football playoff potential as well. People are picking them to finish, you know, at the top of the ACC. So I think those are your three losses right there. But, you know, with the talent on this team, we talked about it, the wide receivers, the offensive skill players, the defense, very veteran on defense, you know, the defensive line a little bit less in terms of, you know, people that have proven it here. But they have so many guys that I think, you know, anything under 7 wins is not a great season. I think once you get to the 7-win threshold, that's when it becomes acceptable and, you know, a positive season to move forward. But I have them going 9-3.
I think I've kind of split it into three categories. I think worst case scenario is 6-6. And that's basically looking at the schedule, losing almost every ACC game and that stretch in October going really badly. I don't think that's going to happen. I think best case scenario is similar to what you predicted. I think it's at 8-4. That's where you're beating the Pitt, you're beating the Cal, you're beating Georgia Tech, and then maybe you lose to Virginia Tech, NC State, and then that Miami game, kind of a toss-up. Where I kind of find the happy middle, I find it at 7-5. I think NC State, Virginia Tech are definitely going to be losses. And then I think Miami's going to be tough, and I also think that Pittsburgh game's going to be tough, just because I think SU always struggles against Pitt. And Emily Liker kind of alluded to it when we had her on last week. It's probably going to be cold, and there's probably not going to be many people there. So it's almost kind of a weird atmosphere. But I'll settle on 7-5, and I think that'd be a very successful first year for Fran Brown.
I agree. I was watching QSportsTalk.com today, and the color commentator for the Syracuse football team said 500 would be an acceptable win percentage. I don't know if 6 wins the talent.
I think that's
worst
case scenario.
Yeah, I would think that too. I mean, you look at the schedule in terms of like not must win games, but theoretically games that Syracuse should win is Ohio, yep. Stanford, who was picked last in the ACC, Holy Cross. UNLV, you could say is a toss up because it's on the road, but UNLV is a Mountain West team.
Yeah. You know, that's not going to be a crazy atmosphere. I don't think.
Not a crazy atmosphere. Yeah. Bobby Petrino, who was their offensive coordinator last year, went to Arkansas. Their quarterback last year for UNLV transferred to USC, so they lost some guys. Boston College, yes, it's on the road. Also have a new head coach. Syracuse barely lost to them last year with, no offense to Carlos Del Rio Wilson, very bad quarterback play in the dome. Cal on the road will be a tough game. So, you know, you can't necessarily chalk that up as a win, no. But they're one of those mid teams where, you know, middle of the pack ACC where you can either win or lose depending on, you know, how the game plays along. UConn is another game that you should probably win. That gets you up to 6 at least right there, if not 7, if you can win games that maybe are either toss ups or you're not predicted to win.
I definitely
see. So that's all. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I definitely see either a 5-0 start or a 4-1 start, the loss to Georgia Tech.
5-0, so like concluding the UNLV game.
Yeah.
Talk about the hype. 5-0 start,
yeah,
into NC State. It would be shades of years past.
It would be.
By the way, it would be shades of years past, so you'd have to be pretty cautiously optimistic going into the second half of the year because, you know, it's not like Dino Babers couldn't start fast. He started out. What, 4-0 last year, 5-0 the year, 6-0 the year before, before that Clemson game that, you know, went downhill pretty fast.
Ended
in that
Dino
second
Babers'
half.
Career, I think.
And literally ended Dino Babers' career. So it'll be an interesting schedule. There'll be some up and downs this season. We talked about the depth chart. Depth chart's looking great at wide receiver, some other positions on the offense, the defense looking very veteran heavy. Some still things to figure out on the defensive line. And then the special teams is also locked and ready to go. Any final predictions, big thoughts for the football season coming up starting this Saturday, AJ?
So I established Zeed Haynes as my guy. I'm going to go as far to say that Aronde Gadsden, sure, he'll maybe still have a great year. Hopefully he stays healthy, but he will not be the leading receiver on this team.
Wow. Okay. So he's not the leading. Yeah. So is Zeed Haynes the leading receiver?
Maybe. Or maybe it's somebody else.
Or someone else. Yeah. Will Aronde Gadsden have more receiving yards than Dan Villari?
Yes.
Yes. Pretty safe to say. I think honestly, like, and I mentioned it earlier, That might be the most intriguing thing, is how much they decide to run two tight ends could determine the playing time for those wide receivers. Could maybe affect my guy, Emmanuel Ross's playing time right there. I'm still high on Emmanuel Ross. He's still a very talented guy. But how much they do double tight ends, double running backs with Yaceen Willis, Laquan Allen Jr., will be very interesting to tell. But the great thing is we start to find out all of that starting this Saturday. Syracuse taking on Ohio in the Dome. Kickoff is at 3:30. We have a special 1 hour countdown to kickoff on WAER starting at 2:30. We had a bunch of different audio stories to feature. We got one on Fran Brown and Dart, Jeff Nixon, Elijah Robinson, the transfers coming in, a schedule preview as well, like we just did right there. So there's a lot to tune into on that. And we'll also have the double overtime on WAER going all the way up until 8:30. The day before that, we have a Sports Night football preview show, breaking down the offense, the defense, the schedule, everything you need to know, just like we just did of the football season coming in 2024. It should be an exciting football season here in the first year under Fran Brown, the Dart, no longer the Ohana, detailed, accountable, relentless, and tough as the Syracuse football program. And we'll see how that plays out throughout the entire season. You'll have to keep tuning in to the Ostrom Avenue podcast each and every week. We'll have our first guest of the season next week, previewing Georgia Tech. And we'll get you a bunch of guests, whether it's reporters, play-by-play, broadcasters, to preview each team before every game. You're going to want to keep tuning in here on the Ostrom Avenue podcast here on WAER.